Welcome, everybody. It's great to have you with us tonight. We're going to be taking on a very special topic tonight, and the topic of self-esteem. Got lots to cover, so just want to welcome you. Hope you're having a great beginning of this new year, 2014. It's hard to believe that we're coming up on the end of January already. Oh, my goodness. Today's the 21st. We're two-thirds of the way through this month. Well, it's great to be with you. I've been giving you a little bit of an update. I do want to let you know that the new assessment was released to the company that this is for on Saturday. So it's very exciting to see it up and functioning. A punch list that needs to be handled. But by Friday, it'll be ready to rock and roll. Next week, I could certainly let you have a code to go take that one just so you can see how it lays out. It's for a home-based business company, so it'll give you an idea. And we should have the version, generic version for the Augmandino site ready in about 6 weeks. So we're very excited about the timing. 2014 is going to be a great year for the Augmandino Group because we're finding more and more ways to get these principles into the hands of people who could really be blessed by them. Before I jump into this, does anybody have a question before we get started? Anything that has been on your mind before we get started on our topic tonight? Okay. I want you to pull out your assessment reports. We're going to take a look at the top right-hand side. It's interesting how often we cycle back and we find ourselves back here at self-esteem. How exciting. We do it about every 6 to 8 weeks. And here we are, taking a look at what's happening in our assessment. And what we want to know, what creates these challenges in self-esteem? Because if I want to correct them, I need to know what's causing them so I can work on those issues. And the number one cause of challenge in the self-esteem starts on the bottom right-hand side of your assessment in mental creation. What expectations are we creating for our life? And underneath that, what is our secret desire and real intention? What's driving that expectation? Now, we talk about this a lot, and I just talked about it on Saturday twice. And it's interesting that even those who have heard it are still going, oh, I think I'm finally getting this. And the answer is really this. We have to guard, vigilantly guard, tenaciously guard, what happens with our vivid visualization. How are we using it? Because the number one cause of challenges in self-esteem, the number one cause is unmet expectations. When our mind, which is so vivid, goes someplace and experiences something in its vividness, and as a result, the brain creates a mental construct, a new reality, constructs a new reality. To the brain, that's the reality. Then we step into life, and we hold life hostage to that reality. We talked about that last week, and we get very discouraged and frustrated. And when we get discouraged and frustrated, we do turn inward. And we do turn inward, we ask ourselves, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And that could be, also, what have I done? What mistakes have I made that are going to keep me from being able to have success? Maybe I'm just destined to be here. Maybe I'll never get to experience that. Maybe it's because I didn't finish this education, or I didn't take care of this person, or I didn't respond to that person's needs, or I was angry at this point, or I hurt this person. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I can almost touch it. I can almost taste it. Why can't I have it? What's wrong with me? Maybe God doesn't even love me. That's the number one cause. In percentages, it's like 80%. It's an enormous percentage of self-esteem challenges are created by that one thing, unmet expectations. So ask yourself this week, as you're reflecting on this and you're reading scroll number 4, I'm nature's greatest miracle. When Og says, I'm not here, I says, I am here for a purpose, and that purpose is to grow into a mountain not to shrink to a grain of sand. Henceforth, I will apply all of my efforts to become the tallest mountain of all, and I'll strain my potential until it cries for mercy. Now, there's a flame that burns inside me, passed down from generations uncounted, and its heat is a constant irritation to my spirit to be better than I am, and I will be. I will fan these flames of dissatisfaction and proclaim my uniqueness to the world. This is a powerful scroll, scroll number 4 on Nature's Greatest Miracle. And it's what we're going to want to be studying this week as we're going through our self-esteem to see what we can do to make some corrections. Excuse me just a moment. This is the third week where I've had a little bit of a cold. So that's our number one cause. So if you've engaged in unmet expectations, you're a little frustrated with how your life's turning out. That's how you know you did. And you beat yourself up, call into question your worth and worthiness and ability and beliefs. Just write a number one down on the paper. Just take a look at it. Wow. And just right next to that, what am I going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? Am I going to keep fantasizing, creating expectations, holding my life hostage and beating myself up? Am I just going to keep doing that? Or am I actually going to do something different? Am I going to learn to use that thought process constructively? Get an inspired idea. Act on it. Create something I didn't have before. Start to find the joy that comes from staying in creation. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Second cause, comparison game. So many of us play this one. We want to be someone else, somewhere else, different house, different car, different relationship, doing something different. We'd rather be traveling the world or doing something different. We want to be up on stage speaking, or we want to be the one practicing law or medicine or doing surgery or whatever it might be. The comparison game. We have talked about this. For those of you who have been on the call for a few weeks or months, you know we've discussed this issue, this clay issue. And the single greatest decision that you can make to heal self-esteem is to use your thought processes constructively so you don't create an expectation that can't be fulfilled. The second greatest thing you can do is to choose your clay. Choose your clay. Now, I remember about 7 weeks ago I asked you this question, but I'm going to ask it again tonight. I can just feel the question still hanging out there. What is it about my life that I don't want? What is it about my life that I don't want? Is it something we're facing that's fearful and we just don't want to deal with it because it's so scary that it's just paralyzing? Is it the fact that we are divorced, single? Is it the fact that we may have too much debt or not enough income? Could it be that we're dealing with an illness, something that requires us to be hypervigilant in terms of what we eat and where we go? Are we impaired at all in our movement because of some disease or injury? Are we just getting older and we don't want to be older? Is our skin starting to get a little wrinkly and our shape starting to not be quite so firm and et cetera? What is it? What is it about our life that we don't like? And I'd have everybody do that, even with a strong health self-esteem, to become conscious of anything about our life that we just wish wasn't there. The next thing we're going to want to do is ask, how is this preparing me to serve others? How is this preparing me to serve others? Right now I just don't want it, but could I embrace it? And if I were to embrace it, how could I be uniquely prepared because of it to serve at a higher level? And lastly, what's stopping me from embracing it, owning it, taking it? Can you feel some of the angst if I just If I just could. No, we can't. We get to live in resentment and resistance and anger, or we get to be in creation. Those are our options. Either those or staying in creation. And if we stay in creation, we get to take what we've been given, whatever that is. And we'll know how reticent we are to doing something with it. If we've been trying to avoid it, we just don't want to deal with it. So we take this and we begin to build with it. And we create magnificent things. Magnificent things. So ask yourself those questions. What is it about my life I don't like? I don't want. Start there. That's the comparison game. It's so deadly to self-esteem because we hate what we believe is us. We hate us because of our hair or our body type or our weight or our speed. That's not who we are. Those are just physical attributes. We're so much more than that. Okay, third. So if you got that one, comparison game, just write down number two. You got an idea what to do with that now. Number three, traumatic events. One of the keys to a traumatic event is that trust has been destroyed. That's what helps create what we would call a traumatic event. Well, have I had a traumatic event? And I ask, well, have you ever had a situation where trust was damaged or destroyed? Someone molested you as a child or physically or emotionally or sexually abused you as an adult. Have you had a career path for years, then one day you walked in and you're summarily dismissed and got a little severance pay and a thank you, and that was it. And your whole life was turned upside down. In the economy, 2008, 2009, or maybe back when our experience in 1988, 89. Have you had a moment when the economy turned on you and there was nothing you could do? It's like water going through your hands, all your assets just whoo. And your dream home you've worked so hard to get that you just knew it was there, and you finally got there and you had enough money to buy it, and all of a sudden the mortgage exceeds the value. And then maybe you have a personal setback, which means you can't pay the mortgage. Even if it was less, you couldn't pay it. And now you have the nightmare of a foreclosure, of have it being printed in the newspaper. And people ask you about it, who read it. You feel shame. That's a pretty traumatic event. We're seeing a lot of those in the last few years. Not just foreclosures, but traumatic events related to finances. You have a traumatic event? Because the question is, what do you want to do about it? You may not be ready to do anything, so you might need a therapeutic assistant. You might want to talk to a marriage and family counselor or a psychologist and just process it a little bit so you get in proper perspective so you can deal with it. If you're just dragging it around and you're using it as an excuse for not succeeding, that's what I would ask. What do you want to do about it? What do you want to do about this? I don't hurt your feelings. Because I know that dragging it around hurts you more than I could ever hurt your feelings. What do you want to do about it? Do you want to hold it in your hand and ask, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? You want to engrave it on your heart so you can use it as a reference point to bless the lives of others? Do you want to finally put it to purpose? Or do you want to just drag it around? Some of those traumatic events are really terrible, and you know I've experienced those. So I don't want to be unfeeling in my comments. Some of you have been really prepared to do some very sacred work. Some people in a lot of pain. But not if you keep dragging it around. So just ask yourself, have I had a traumatic event? And if I have, write it down on the piece of paper. Well, when I was this age, this happened to me. Or this happened, or I did this, or whatever happened to create a traumatic event. I worked there for 25 years, and it was my life's work, and I love what I did, and boom, next day I don't have a job. I'm home watching TV. Whatever otherwise write it down so you see what it is. Because if you can write it on a piece of paper and look at it, it's going to bring you closer to healing, being able to use it differently. What was it? Teenage pregnancy? What was it? Ask yourself, do I need to get some therapeutic intervention? It's just so painful, I just can't hardly talk about it or think about it, even write on a piece of paper. Then what are you going to do about that? Are you going to go ahead and find that person you can talk to? Please do. Life is waiting for you. There are opportunities waiting for you. There's joy waiting for you. But not so long as we're hanging on to this experience. So that's traumatic events. The last one is secrets. And this is a tough one, because we're talking about alcoholism, drug abuse, eating disorders, pornography addictions. These are really painful, personal experiences that can create a lot of guilt and shame. Guilt where we feel bad about what we've done, shame where we feel bad about who we've become. Well, you're not your addiction. And I'm not a therapist, so talking about addictions is really not something I'm qualified to do. I just know you're not your addiction. I know you can step back from it, and you can deal with this in the hands of a professional. What are you going to do about it? You going to let it keep going for another day, another week, another month, another year, another decade? You're going to finally get out of your life so that you can see peace come back into your life and light come back into your life. You can be who you really are. What are you going to do about it? Because those are the causes of self-esteem challenges. That's what creates the self-esteem challenge. Because our objective is to be real. Just write that on a piece of paper, R-E-A-L, real. It's the root to relationship. It means that we can connect with people. We're real. We don't have to pretend we're someone else. And someone having a secret doesn't know who they are. Are they the facade trying to connect? Are they a despicable person in the closet experiencing whatever it is? Who are they? They can't be real. Someone who's had a traumatic event who just withdraws when someone reaches out to shake their hand. And that can be very real in a traumatic event. It's really hard to be real. You want to process through this with a therapist and so that you can be real. When we're playing the comparison game, sometimes we're even pretending we're the other person. If not that, we're just beating ourselves up for being less than. We're all focused on ourselves. We can't be real. That's focused on others. Unmet expectations, we're just burdened and feel depressed and awful. We can't be available to connect with people. So the objective is to be real. The next word is genuine. Genuine. Genuine means genius, our natural genius, to own our genius, to bring all of what we can be to the table in the service of others. We're not doing it to brag. We're not doing it to impress. We are truly bringing our gifts to the table, fully maximizing them in the service of others. That's being genuine. So real, genuine, and authentic. Anthosectic, being our true self. Our true self. Not the thoughts, not the person we are when we surrender to our unhealthy habits of thinking, but our true self. Can you feel that? If I'm real, I can connect with people. I can bring my gifts to their service. I'm authentic. I'm being my true self, acting on my own moral authority, doing the next right thing for the right reason because I want to, and I get to, and I choose to. So the objective is to be real and genuine and authentic. That's why we're working on those four causes of child abuse, because child abuse of self-esteem. Because they keep us from being real and genuine and authentic. What they cause us to be is to impress and pretend and feel shame and to fear. So our objective is to be real, genuine, authentic without the need to impress, pretend, feel shame or fear. The quote for this comes from Robert S. Hartman, PhD, who said that my objective, and to do this is the most difficult difficult task in our mortal existence. I think we should find some solace in that comment. This is the most difficult challenge in our tangible world. And he said, the highest level of maturity. So if we are trying to impress others, which means we're trying to make something bigger than it actually is, pretend we're trying to make something that doesn't exist look bigger than it actually is. We're pretending like something's true. Shame, it comes from the root word sham, like a pillow sham. You could call it a big wet blanket that we just put over top of our gifts and talents. We rob every one of them. And fear, we all know what that is, false evidence appearing real. We have cortisol coursing in our bodies. We have fear dendrites. It feels real. It's just a physiological reaction to a thought process. It's not real. But it feels real. So real, genuine, authentic, without the need to impress, pretend, feel ashamed, and fear. Now, any of us who've ever struggled with self-esteem, and I've been one of those, this has been a real challenge for me all my life. We can get in that place where we try to impress people with what we have versus using what we have to serve others. That's something I have to be very careful about. I don't know, maybe I crossed that line. I share in the book the story about having a sports car and getting that kind of a feeling I'm becoming my stuff again and sticking in a garage for 9 months, locking the garage and not even going in. When I went in, the battery was dead. Had to jump the car to be able to go drive it again. We just don't want to have things that we're trying to feel better about ourselves by pretending or trying to impress or feeling worse about ourselves by fear and shame. So that's our objective, is to do this. How do we do this? How do we do this? Many of you have a copy of my book, The Observer's Chair. And in that book, we talk a little bit about love and self-love. So what do we do to get past these pieces? I'm going to go there because I want to read you just a couple of lines that come out of this. It says, love thyself. Self-love is about having reverence for the infinite and intrinsic gift of life, starting with your own clay. It is about honoring and magnifying our gifts, creating the most we can with what we've been given. It is about honoring our beliefs and embracing our intrinsic goodness. It is about being real, genuine, authentic, free of doubt and fear, fully available to focus on the service and serve others, being the observer. In his writings, Dr. Hartman concluded, liking oneself is not an easy matter. You know, I've said to you, if I said half the things to you that your thought processes say to you, could we still be friends? That's really hard. It's not an easy matter. In truth, philosophers have tried to give a method of how to do this from Socrates to Kierkegaard. If a healthy self-esteem requires that we first love ourselves unconditionally and intrinsically, and it does, Dr. Hartman suggests that there are four critical steps we'll want to embrace. Know thyself, choose thyself, create thyself, and give thyself. We will all want to engage in a truthful and introspective inventory of our life, past and present. We'll want to identify our gifts, talents, and our current condition of our finances, relationships, physical health, and spiritual lives. If you have this book, I'm on page 15. We'll want to examine our failures and successes, our hurts and our victories. Take courage. For good or for ill, we do not create unfavorable life circumstances by looking at them. We just shed light on them and put them in their proper perspective. When we shed light on our lives, we experience one of the great miracles of life. We somehow know what is good, and we also know what needs to be changed. We also discover that we are inherently and intrinsically good. After all this, the gift is given. After all of this, is the gift given to an observer? Page 16. Choose thyself. Now, we've talked about this one. Dr. Hartman writes, no matter, on page 17, no matter how despicable you are to yourself, you must choose yourself. Accept yourself as the one you are. I am the one I am. This is the truth for now, but it will not always be so. This is the foundation on which we can begin to build our new life, and there is no ceiling to the growth that can be achieved when we choose to sit in the observer's chair and we start building from this bedrock, this rock-solid foundation. This is true no matter how deep we must dig to find the bedrock. Instead of investing our life living in resentment because of what we do not have, from here to the observer's chair, we shift our focus to creating the most we can with what we've been given. What is? I quote from an unknown author, your life is a gift from God. What you choose to do with it is your gift to God. Now create thyself. Now we've done the inventory, awards and all. We have decided to choose ourselves. We're choosing ourselves. No matter how despicable we are to ourselves, we choose ourselves. Create thyself. Let's rise early each day, committed to create the most we can with the clay we've been given. Let's focus on the lessons learned and how these challenges have provided opportunities for more growth. Let's commit to stretch and grow and become the person who can handle increasing levels of stress with greater and greater levels of ease. Let's plug into the planet. And once we start intentionally creating our lives, we start to give ourselves. The more honest and transparent we become with ourselves, the more we're able to get out of our own way. We grow unfettered by fear and shame or the need to compare. Our cup is filled and begins to run over. We have more and enough to spare. We give of ourselves freely and are fed instead of feeling depleted. Dr. Hartman writes, and I'll conclude with this. This means forget all limitations. Be generous with your own self. Give your own self to your fellow man and to the world. Love your neighbor as yourself. Throw bread on the water. Now, that sounds rather simple. But that really is the formula for healing self-esteem. Know thyself, choose thyself, create thyself, give thyself. The hole we want to fill in our soul is filled by the service that we provide. It's that simple. Now, one more thing. A couple more things, but one more thing that's important. When we were over in discipline and structure, we've had the occasion to talk about how a systemic thought works. Right, wrong, win, lose, life, death, black, white. We also know that it cannot choose the significance of the topic at hand. Everything has to be right or wrong. It doesn't distinguish. Well, we're just talking about a pizza, let it go. It will blow a marriage up based on the correct topping for a pizza, sausage or pepperoni. Now, here's the challenge. When we have a strong opinion about something, a strong opinion, and somebody summarily dismisses us, that means they just excuse us like we're not here, or they don't agree with us, or they want to fight with us, it becomes personal. We are so highly vested in our thoughts because of how active our thought processes are. We built that mental construct, new reality, that expectation, the concrete condition for happiness. It might be the way the birthday party is going to be run. It might be the way a car needs to be washed. It might be the way the garage needs to be cleaned or the way the furniture needs to be set up in a living room. It could be any one of those issues or more. But our mind has that already. It's a done deal. It's a done deal. Now, when somebody disagrees with us, it pushes a self-esteem button. I want you to look at your assessments for a moment of self-esteem and see if your buttons get pushed when you have a very strong opinion and then somebody else overrides you. What button gets pushed? We're going to take a look at these just quickly tonight. Whole and complete, first measurement of self-esteem. That measurement's orange or red. It's like somebody's calling into question your very worth. I want you to feel that next time you need to be right about something and can't be. That they're discounting my very value as a human being. Confident. If they disagree with you, and this is orange or red, they're calling into question your ability. They don't think I know what I'm doing. If it's valiant, orange or red, it's like they're calling into question my belief system. Peaceful. If it's orange or red, now I would know if I'm doing your debrief. I don't know just by looking at your graph, because if it's orange or red, it could be to the left or it could be to the right. It could be over or under focused, we call it. Let me tell you the two and just let you think about it. You just give in. You acquiesce. You don't fight. You don't want the stress. Okay, I'll give up my idea again. Okay, I guess I have to be wrong to keep the peace. It's a heaviness. It's a burden. The other side of peaceful is we'll fight for it. We'll fight. We'll push back because our self-esteem is on the line. Those are the four primary buttons that get pushed when self-esteem is called into question. So just take a look because it may serve you as you go through life and you feel strongly about something and someone's not agreeing with you and it hurts. Just look at your assessment. You'll know, wow, they're calling into question my worth or worthiness. I know they're not doing that. And we can stop letting this measurement get us down. So just know some things can absolutely be personal. Well, we want to study Scroll 4. Scroll 4 is our scroll this week. We're going to study it morning, noon, and night because you'll want to embrace your uniqueness. You're absolutely unique. There's no one like you, not even close. And you want to embrace that uniqueness and put it on display. You're going to get discouraged and to have despair, and that's a source that kind of beats up our self-esteem. We get tired. I want you to just write this down on your paper tonight. I will never make another decision when I'm tired. I will never make another decision when I'm tired. It's when we are overwhelmed and we start to reflect on the things in our life that aren't working, and all of a sudden we decide, I don't want to be married anymore, or I don't want that job anymore. And we make really rash decisions when we're tired. I still remember driving home on Highway 8 in San Diego, turning onto Shadow Road to go to our home, and I stopped right there when I got off the freeway. I remember saying, David, you are too tired to be making this decision. It was a rash business decision. Because I was exhausted, like 10 or 11 o'clock at night after a long day at the office. I said, wait till morning till you have sleep, then reflect on this. And sure enough, the next morning after a good night's sleep, it looked different. It felt different. So don't ever make decisions when you're tired. You want to be rested. And just push through because you know where dry desert ends, green grass grows. We also know we're here for a purpose. I shared that with you a moment ago. We're not to shrink to a grain of sand. We're to grow into the tallest mountain of all. We're to concentrate our energies on the challenge of the moment. It's a wonderful thing where he talks about the problems of my home will be left in my home. I'll think not of my family when I am in the marketplace, for this will cloud my thoughts. So too will the problems of the marketplace be left in the marketplace, and I will think not of my profession when I'm in my home, for that will dampen my love. Here's the crux of this measurement. Here's the paradox. When we are fully present in the now, fully present, we are spending time with our natural genius. Feels good. It actually starts to heal our self-esteem. So if we stay focused on the task at hand, that means we're staying in the now, which means we're bringing our own natural gifts to that moment. We are spending time with our true self, and we won't be so tough on ourself. And I love this at the end of the scroll where he talks about that My problems and discouragements are really just opportunities in disguise. I'll no longer be deceived by the clothes they wear. I'll look beyond the cloth, and I'll not be deceived. This is a great scroll for you to study this week. Spend some time on this scroll. And then next week, we're going to jump right back into connection. I'd like to be able to do a little work with someone next week on terms of connection so that we can work through maybe a challenging conversation or a person you'd like to talk to so we can practice intrinsic validation. I don't think we need to teach it next week. I think we need to practice it. So let's play with that a little bit in our conversation. Well, I'd like to open this up for anybody who has a question tonight about self-esteem or any of the other qualities. If there's anyone who would like to come out, that would be great. It's your turn.
Dave, this is Diana.
Hi, Diana.
I wanted to expound a little bit on that last thing that you were talking about not making any major decisions when you're tired. The wonderful 12-step programs have a thing that they say, they call it HALT, H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And I also add PMS to that, too. And, boy, I tell you, that has been one of those things in my life that I've had to remind myself, like, okay, you're upset, so don't make any major decisions right now because you're hungry or you're angry or you're super lonely or you're tired or, you know, you're sick or something. So that's very, very, very important for, I think, for everybody to understand because it's so easy to get caught up in that and to make some really bad decisions.
Absolutely. Would you say that one more time so everybody have a chance to write it down? The acronym HALT.
HALT, H-A-L-T. Hungry, angry, lonely, and tired.
So that's a wonderful expansion from tired.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, beautiful. Do you know where in the big book that is found?
Don't think it's a big book acronym. I think it's one of the things that was kind of added in meetings after 1935.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, I love it. I think that's fabulous. Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired.
Mm-hmm.
I wanna add that. I'm just adding it to make sure that makes it into the next version of the training, because that just expands beautifully on decisions when tired. Excuse my cough. Almost got to the mute. Well, thank you for that insight.
Sure.
And you said you've made some decisions when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, and they're not good decisions, are they?
Right. Or sick, or, you know, in a bad mental state. I mean, you can expound upon that for your own personal reasons, but, yeah, because you're not yourself when you let those other things start controlling your mind and your life. You're not grounded.
I think that's the key. You're not yourself. You have surrendered your free will to those unhealthy habits of thinking. So they're now controlling your decisions and your thoughts, and you'll make some really harmful decisions because you're not yourself. The next morning you wake up and you've got more energy. You can fight some of those thought processes more easily. Yeah, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. It's like you're letting all of your energy you use to keep your thought processes in alignment, you're letting them all take over. And that's when the worst of the worst shows up. Yeah, you're right on. You're not yourself. you're in bondage over in that other chair, chained down, and your thoughts are running the show. So well said. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Always such wisdom. Anyone else who would like to add tonight? And Diana just gave us a great example, because it's not always a question. It's not always a problem. Sometimes it's one of your own insights. That's richness, because if this call is recorded, there'll be a lot of people in this next week that'll be listening to it. They can't be here on a Tuesday night, and we just fed them something that we would have missed otherwise. So anyone else who would like to share before we wrap up tonight? Okay, well, I want to thank you all for being on this call. Let's faithfully listen to Scroll 4, or read Scroll 4 three times a day this week, because this is a major challenge. We've got a pandemic in our nation of challenges in self-esteem, and generally we see people who look kind of shy and, you know, like they're uncertain and lacking confidence. The most deadly are those that are overcompensating, you know, with anger or loudness or spending money to try to feel better, whatever we might be doing to overcompensate. So let's listen to it this week and see if we can't start to feel a little bit more real and genuine and authentic. Well, thanks, everybody. Jump off of mute and say goodnight if you would. It's been great to be with you tonight. Good night, everyone.
Thanks, Dave.
Good night, Dave. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome. Thanks, everyone. Good night, everyone. Good night.